Now, the Minister for Defence has just finished taking questions in the Dáil this evening. Earlier today, the Secretary, or General Secretary, should I say, of the Association of Commissioned Officers, Lieutenant General Conor King, described the current retention crisis in the Defence Forces as a catastrophe and accused the Departments of Defence and Public Expenditure in particular of a complete abuse of a dominant position when it came to industrial relations and negotiations over pay and condition. Christina, he was laying the blame squarely at the door of the government and the permanent government.
Yes, so the General Secretary of the Military Officers Group, he launched a pretty stinging attack, I think, on what he described as dismissive and frustrating civil servants within the Department of Public Expenditure. He didn't really hold back in terms of the criticism that he had, also in relation to officials within the Department of Defence also, and highlighting, I think, some of the inadequacies he feels, in terms of the resourcing of the Defence Forces, the fight that he feels the Defence Forces are facing into from government officials in terms of getting, you know, a coherent action plan and measures in place to resource, I suppose, the Defence Forces properly, and highlighting, I suppose, some of the shortfalls that we have within the military, highlighting some of the operations such as last week with the ship and the drug smuggling operation, and highlighting what can be achieved even with the limited resources that they have, and sort of putting the question out there of look at what we could actually achieve if we were properly resourced.
All right. And pensions was one thing in particular. You mentioned people hear about pay quite a bit, resources and numbers, but pensions was up for particular mention.
Yeah,
when
they had
an
Air Corps officer, I believe, just speaking about, you know, the experience of being within the military and discussing, I suppose, some of the pension options, which, you know, a lot of people on the front line would have criticism about, having, you know, put in a full life service as such into your work and coming out of it at the end of the day in your late 50s, 60s with little to show for it, saying that this is one of the reasons why the retention issue is so acute within the Defence Forces and probably within other sectors of the civil service also, but highlighting that, you know, until these issues of pay, remuneration, you know, work-life balance, pensions, until all of that is sort of dealt with, they're going to continue to see people leaving.
Right. And is this, what were those issues you've just checklisted there, is that why RACO, when they were in front of the committee today, were so critical of the Department of Public Expenditure and reform in particular?
Yeah, like, I think, in fairness, there has been a discussion over the last year very much to the fore about resourcing of the Defence Forces. And I think people will have heard that over the last number of months. And I think it will be quite jarring to hear that sort of criticism towards the, you know, a public expenditure. Because in fairness, Micheál Martin, some might say, is one of the ministers that's taking on a lot of the issues and taking them seriously, perhaps more than perhaps some of the defence ministers in the past. We've had, you know, the review into harassment and all the rest and the culture within the defence forces. There seems to be a plan in place to get it back on its feet. So I think it is, you know, would have a good few people scratching their head as to why there seems to be a bit few roadblocks coming up from the Department of Expenditure side of things.
All right. Carl Berry, I'm not quite sure how long you're out of the defence forces, but what RACO was saying today seems to see, whether it's down to your departure or not, things have declined certainly over the past number of years. Numbers in the Defence Forces under 8,000. It seems, you know, the government targets are high on ambition and perhaps questionable on delivery, they were saying today.
Absolutely. So I was inside in the committee meeting for the 2.5 hours, actually. I thought it was a very honest and very candid assessment of the situation. So basically, the Defence Forces, there's a net loss of 500 troops every single year. So the Commission of the Defence Forces is recommending that they should have 11,500 troops. They currently have about 7,500. So the guards at the moment are down 1,000 guards, and there's a furore in society in relation, how are we going to get the numbers of guards back up to 15,000? And that's a justifiable request. The Defence Force are down 4,000 troops, regulars, and 3,000 reservists, and there doesn't seem to be any action at all being taken.
All right. And where is that seen? Where is the lack of numbers seen in the Defence Forces in terms of the organisational pressures?
Great question. We saw it last week. So only one helicopter was available on a Tuesday and Wednesday, normal office hours. We have six helicopters of that variant, and five of them are on the ground in Baldonnell. And they're under maintenance because there's so few technicians. So in Baldonnell at the moment, only a third of the technicians that they should have are available. And as a result, only one helicopter. And I should say, really only half a helicopter, because it was actually tasked to the HSE in Athlone to do an air ambulance mission. It had to be retasked, repurposed, and sent down to Cork to do the assault. So I think what Racket was saying today was enough is enough. Someone is going to get seriously injured unless this changes. And it's not a theoretical risk, because we've lost a helicopter in 1998, a Dauphin helicopter in Tramore. That was the Defence Forces helicopter. The Coast Guard lost a helicopter about 4 years ago in Blacksod in Mayo. So we can't take these risks with people's health and safety anymore. And it's just got to stop.
All right. Barry Cowan, I think the target is to get 18 serviceable ships defending the waters around the country, patrolling them and carrying out similar operations to what we've seen last week. Racco, in front of the committee today, said two are serviceable.
Yeah, we're a long way from what you would like to see, what you would expect to see, and what you've committed to see in the context of the level of ambition initiated after the commission reported to government last year. We're in full employment. There's difficulties in recruiting into the services, but like has been said, the job they did last week was hugely professional. We're very thankful for that work and that commitment, but there has to be a means by which we can improve the situation.
But numbers were higher during the last boom. There wasn't the same issue around recruitment in the last boom.
The issue about pay for new recruits was something that has been addressed in recent times, and that point was made today. But the other point that was made was the pay levels for officers for long service is not comparable with the civil service. And the issue about government making a commitment to increase funding from 1.1 billion to 1.5 is something that has to be taken seriously, that has to be held to account. And the Minister of Responsibility and the department have to respond to the committee, have to respond to the stakeholders to show what progress has been made in relation to the government's commitment in this area.
Right. And how would you account for the numbers dropping so critically over the last number of years?
Morale is not where it should be. Like I said to you, the issue about new recruits was something that had to be addressed in the short term. That has been addressed with increases in pay. There's efforts to increase allowances, which have been mentioned, but there's a long way to go. And it is incumbent, no more than it is within the judicial, within the Department of Justice, for those public servants to engage with the department, to engage with those in responsibility with a view to agreeing a plan of progress that has the potential to be implemented and can be honoured with the commitments that are made by government in the context of the available finances to do so.
All right, I'll come back to that. Pa Daly, what's your take on what was being said in front of the committee today in terms of morale, pay and conditions, but particularly pointing the finger at two government departments who there was clear frustrations being expressed at?
Yeah, well, there's a common theme running across a number of departments here in terms of morale in the Army and Navy and also in the Guards in relation to retention, work-life balance. It's a common theme that's across. And we also see it in relation to, I think, coming on to the barrister's strike. What you have is the minister is blaming deeper, and in this instance here, you have deeper taking the blame as well. But there's obviously huge frustration. And
where would you put the blame?
Well, the blame has been at the foot of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, who have held this ministry for the past 12 and 7 years. And they obviously aren't addressing the if you listen to what Lieutenant Commander O'Meron said, and to the I think Commander King, Racco, there's huge frustration there about, and they've no confidence in the government's implementation of the recommendations. And again, across the Commission for the Future Policing, you see recommendations there 5 years ago, they're not being implemented. You see them here, broken promises across various departments, and it's not being addressed properly.
All right. Barry Cowan, this differs from the issue in the Gardaí, in that what's been called for by opposition politicians of the Minister for Justice is to do something about the Garda roster row, which is an internal operational issue. But the Defence Forces Representative Association here is talking about that the Officers Representative Association is expressing frustration at the implementation of policy by government departments. Now, that's not an internal operational role. So how do you account for what they see as a lack of action,
you know,
there?
As Pat has said, there was a commitment on the part of all stakeholders to participate in the Commission's work and to accept its recommendations and to allow the government the space to pick its response to that and chart a course as to how they may that may be implemented thereafter. The government did that. The government committed to the funding that is required to make the progress that is contained within those recommendations, and they have to be held to account for non-commitment thereafter. So, you know, my job within the committee is to hold a government minister and all those stakeholders to account as to what plan is in process to implement the provisions that were made by the Commission, that are accepted by the government, committed to by the government, and to show us how that is done on a yearly basis thereafter.
All right. Carl Berry, how does that sound?
Well, I think the big issue is we don't have a standalone defence minister. So that's changed in 2012.
What difference would that make, though? In the late 1980s, there was Michael J. Noonan, and under his tenure, army wives were out marching because there was a similar, there was a poor pay and conditions. There was no representative organisations at that time. Arguably, his poor tenure as a standalone minister for defence gave rise to the industrial relations mechanisms we have now because of sheer frustration.
Yeah, so political governance is vital. Having a good standalone defence minister is the way to go. So we have two cultures, really. We have an army culture, which is very, very focused on outcome and product. We have a civil service culture in the department, which is focused on process. And you need either a senior or a junior minister in Newbridge, where the headquarters is, every single day, just doing basic governance. Stop doing that. I want you to do this, and I want it done by Friday. And report back to me on Friday. The problem is we do have Micheál Martin, who I have a good relationship with, but unfortunately he's doing five other jobs.
Right, so this is a question of grip, is it?
Absolutely. I mean, the question I suppose you could ask is, should DPIR even exist anymore? It was brought in 2012 for a specific reason when the Troika was here. Should it not be reintegrated back into the Department of Finance? I mean, we created a brand new department only 3 years ago. We have two education ministers now, one for normal education, one for higher education. Why is the Defence Force suffering? And without a dedicated, standalone, quality Defence Minister, this issue is going to continue.
All right, Barry Cowan, do you want to just give any answer before I move on to something else?
The government made its decision on the composition of the government and the various apportionment of ministries with responsibilities for certain departments. The Taoiseach, the and Minister for Foreign Affairs, has responsibility in relation to defence. He is answerable to the Dáil, he is answerable to government, and he'll make a case for government to implement the provisions as recommended by the Commission, and he has to set out and chart out a mechanism by which the Department of Finance or Expenditure can cater for the investment that's needed. And we've seen the beginnings of that. It's not at the pace that was initiated initially or that is appropriate to the needs associated with those that were before the committee today. And that's something that we as a committee will seek to hold to account and those of responsibility in this area.
All right.
Only Ireland and tiny Malta have no dedicated standalone defence.
Right. Yeah, well, the next government will have the responsibility and duty to apportion ministries to to those that they feel can do so to the best of their ability and to decide on what ministries should be full ones and shouldn't.
Okay. I want to move on to something else because the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, was in Kyiv meeting other European foreign ministers there and as a show of solidarity with Ukraine. And he was talking about the level of aid Ireland was providing to Ukraine, and amongst that aid, he was talking about rifle training, which came possibly as a surprise to people who'd been following the level of aid that had been given to Ukraine before this. It came up at ministers' questions earlier on this evening when Micheál Martin was handling defence questions. Here's Breed Smith's question from People Before Profit to him.
A lot of us were alarmed when you were in Ukraine that you announced that the Irish forces will be providing rifle training, and hitherto casualty training was provided with the German army, demine and explosives clearance with the Polish army. And when asked if you considered rifle training as non-lethal aid, your answer was, our support for Ukraine is multifaceted, important to ensure it continues to be relevant, flexible, fit for purpose. This is a basic self-defence issue and it's humanitarian to defend your own people. Now, if I fired a rifle, a bullet would come out of it, and that bullet, if it hits somebody, is likely to kill them. But yet you describe it as non-lethal and humanitarian.
Well, that was Breed Smith there. Pat Daly, do you share those concerns?
Yeah. Well, the big concern here is the lack of debate. And we had the chairman's report for this consultative forum that took place in a lot of towns or cities around the country during the summer. And that report still hasn't been published. And in a similar way, what you have before anyone is sent to Germany to go to Ukraine, a complete lack of debate, not even within any of the committees as to what is going to go on.
If there was a debate, what would you be saying in it?
Well, we don't have any difficulty with the three people who are, I think it's three, that are over in Ukraine at the moment. We originally thought, however, that they were, there was a demining kind of a function that they had.
They're in Germany, but yeah,
They're in Germany, yeah, but apparently now it's gone into rifle training. Now, we as I said, it's in an EU type of mission. We don't have any difficulty with it, but where's the debate? But the last time when there was PESCO training happening on the previous Thursday, we suggested that there would be at least a gathering together of the committee on the Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday before it was going to be voted on or before the decision was going to be made. And the government refused that. So they won't publish the results of the chairman's report. They won't have a debate about it. That's the problem.
But to be clear, before I go to the rest of the panel on this, what would you be saying in the debate? Would you be objecting to any of this?
Well, you see, the debate is going to give you a chance to flesh out exactly what is going on. And it's not until now that you see the likes of the minister coming in, or Micheál Martin coming into Dáil and explaining what is actually going on over there. As I said, we don't have any difficulty with the three going to Germany. However, we want to know, we want some clarity about what is going on before they go over and not have an ad hoc basis and an incremental basis of it moving from one to the other.
All right. Barry County did come out late in the day, didn't it? There was talk about combat medicine. There was talk about mine clearance. And then it was even when the Taoiseach was speaking to RT's News at 1 from Kyiv, he was talking about rifle drill. It wasn't quite clear whether he was talking about the handling of rifles on parade ground or shooting them in a firing range.
Okay, well, in the first instance, I think there was almost universal support for the government's measures in this regard when it was discussed in the Dáil previously. As has been said, it's casualty training, it's demining, it's multifaceted, as the Taoiseach alluded to, flexible and humanitarian. And, you know, you're helping to assist armies defend themselves. There are times you will have to use a rifle to defend yourself. So I think I have no problem whatsoever with the commitment that the Irish government have made on behalf of the rest of us.
Make all facets of the multifaceted training clear to people, and if you're confident of people's support, be clear with them.
Yeah, well, you're in an army, you're going to use a gun at some stage. And if an army is seeking to defend itself against aggression of this nature from the Russian state, which is, to say the least, you know, nobody supports it. And we have to seek to support that people and its efforts to defend itself. And it involves elements of this type, then we proceed along those lines.
I'll be with you in a minute, Carl Berry. Christina
Finn. Yeah, I watched that exchange between Micheál Martin and Catherine Connolly particularly was quite heated in the remarks that she was making, saying that she was horrified that a neutral country was getting involved in such actions. And Micheál Martin did seem to get quite annoyed, saying that what Ireland is doing is very, very limited. It's very basic drill training. Accuse people of overstating it and saying that to get real here, we are not providing any military assistance.
Was this new to you in covering, in generally covering the level, you know, well, the politics around this?
Yeah, we've heard sort of the, what would you say, sort of the stepping around sort of the assistance that is being provided. And we had our news correspondent, Niall O'Connor, was actually over in Kyiv with Micheál Martin this week, where he was posing those questions to the Taoiseach, where there did seem to be, as you said, some ambiguity about exactly the details of it. But it does play into, I think, the two parallel discussions that we're having here, where we're discussing, you know, resourcing a defence forces that's seriously under-resourced. And parallel to that, there's also discussion underway about neutrality. And Breed's a bit sort of asking the Taoiseach this evening about how far the Taoiseach was willing to sort of stretch the neutrality mechanisms, you know, by saying that it's non-lethal assistance. She was sort of honing in and probing what exactly the Taoiseach views as non-lethal assistance, whether that means handling a gun or not. And, you know, that might be subjective to a lot of people.
Carl Berry, whether you agree with it or not, are you satisfied that it has been made clear enough in advance what the type and the level of aid is and how it fits in with Ireland's security and defence policy?
Yeah, it probably wasn't as well communicated as it should have been, but that's because the baseline level of defence debate is so poor in Ireland anyway. But I'd be in favour of the training continuing for sure. It's very consistent with the Geneva Convention. So even doctors and priests in wartime situations can carry weapons for their own protection and for the protection of their own patients. So if it's consistent with the Geneva Convention, very happy with that.
All right. And what, as you understand it, or do you have any insight into it? What is the training? And we talk of rifle drill or rifle training.
Just basic weapon handling. So it's an integral part of the combat medicine module. I mean, the first step, if you come across it casually inside in the firefight, is you get them out of the firefight, you throw a smoke grenade and you drag them into cover. There's no point in trying to patch holes in a casualty if there's an enemy sniper putting more holes in them at the same time. So it's an integral part of the medical module, and I'd be very much in favour of it.
Okay, just before we go to the next item, I wanted to ask you, there's a Irish peacekeepers in Kosovo, there's rising tensions there. Is there any additional supports you think they should be given, and would you have concerns about them being there?
So firstly, no concerns at all. We have 13 very highly professional people based in the capital, Pristina, at the moment. If we should be doing something, we should be reinforcing them with additional troops, but we don't have those troops at the moment. The situation seems to have stabilised in the last 72 hours. The Americans have just parked a big aircraft carrier off the Albanian coast. That sends a very, very strong signal to Belgrade. And the Germans have been on in relation to Serbia's plan to try and get into the European Union as well. So massive political pressure has been put on Serbia, and they've withdrawn their troops, at least some of them, back from the border.